Hey, everybody. It's March. Well, it's March 4th. You know, Johnny, we're going to talk about how we do this. The Digital Bytes newsletter that we're going to cover today is from March 2nd, right? And we're going to bring on a wonderful woman from Luxembourg, right, at CMS.
A Luxembourgian or Luxembourg.
A Luxembourger.
A Luxembourger.
Right. I invented that word, I think. I got to wrap my head around dates. This is the March 2nd newsletter that you and I happen to be recording on March 4th.
Yes.
We could accidentally talk about news that didn't exist at the time.
But even more confusing, this will actually be in Digital Bytes on March the 7th.
Oh, see, now it's broken. I'm ruined.
Well, welcome to the show, everyone. And, you know, as regular listeners be aware, James and I do a show once a week whereby we're looking at how, where, and why blockchain technology and the digital assets that the technology can create, where are they being used in different industries, in different jurisdictions? And, you know, we cover a whole range of topics, you know, from sort of good old crypto to DeFi, non-fungible tokens, but also the ability to have digital securities. And that's very much what we'll be talking about later on with Aurélie Vimont from Luxembourg, a law firm called CMS. And they'll be telling us a little bit about how the laws and regulations have changed in Luxembourg, in the heart of Europe. So that's coming up after the break. But before that, in this week's edition of Digital Bytes, we had a number of other articles looking at how blockchain and digital assets can potentially impact the real estate sector, how blockchain technology is really having a big impact on global payments, and then, you know, talk about inflation. And, you know, it seems very much on the rise. And we've actually just finished an article this morning looking at, once again, the problem of inflation, which has been, you know, substantially exacerbated in the last week with what's been happening in Europe with Russia and Ukraine. But we'll come on to that next week. So that's just a taste for some of the different articles that we've got. In this week's Digital Bytes, James.
I tell you what's interesting to me is that everybody has always said for years about, you know, use Bitcoin to hedge inflation. And did we expect those types of numbers now? Right? This is some in America, it's like 7.9% this year. And like we said, we're in March 4th.
Well,
it's
that's
wild.
Well, you're right. You see, it's inflation at the moment in the US is, it's the highest it's been for over 40 years.
Yep.
And they're now talking about, well, it's interesting, before the sort of the conflict in Ukraine, the expectation was that we were going to see potentially as many as 7 or 8 even rises in interest rates by sort of 0.25% each time in 2022 through to 2023. And as a result of that, we saw a bit of a shakeout in bond markets. And the reason for these rise in interest rates is because, particularly in the US, we've seen a huge amount of fiscal stimulus. Uncle Sam opening up his checkbook and just literally giving money away to the citizens as a way to sort of fend off the worst of the impact of COVID in sort of isolation and forced lockdowns. And now what's happened is that as COVID begins to, or certainly seems to be beginning to recede, in many countries, not everywhere by any means, but in many countries, people have gone out and started spending money because they've been sort of pent up demand because they have literally been at home for nearly 2 years. And as they're spending money, companies are spending money and the economies were picking up, you know, quite smartly. And then immediately they run into the sort of, you know, the constraints of supply chains, because a lot of the manufacturing comes from Latin America or from parts of Asia and indeed India, and those areas, they're still struggling with the impact of COVID. So there's been a huge surge in increase in demand, but that demand hasn't been able to be met by some of the manufacturing, and that's forced up prices. And then alongside that, we've seen some of the commodity prices going up. And you're right, many people, it was very much proposed that when we have a period of inflation, then Bitcoin would be digital gold. It would actually be a great hedge against inflation because you couldn't just print more of it. Okay, you can dig up more gold, but it's relatively limited in a commodity compared to, say, you know, pound notes or yen or dollar bills or euros, where effectively the governments can, and we've seen over the last couple of years, just it's almost an unlimited supply. They can just print more and more and more of them. And people thought, well, Bitcoin will retain its value and prove to be a really good inflation hedge. But what seems to have happened is that as interest rates look like they're starting to go up, people have perceived higher risk investments. So things like emerging markets, tech stocks, cryptocurrencies, they've all actually had a bit of a pullback. So we've seen, you know, some fairly sharp falls on Bitcoin in particular. And then in the last few days, as people are saying, well, look, you're not going to be able to put interest rates up because what's happened in Ukraine is going to have an impact across the world. And therefore, interest rates won't go up as much. And therefore, potentially, maybe we can start looking to buy some of these cryptocurrencies. So we've seen a sharp rebound in the price of Bitcoin over the last, literally the last couple of days. And alongside that, what we're seeing is that the actual volatility of Bitcoin itself, by the amount it zigs and zags and goes up and down, it's actually proving to be not quite as volatile, perhaps, as people actually sort of thought it is, because historically it was very, very volatile. But now what we're seeing is there's more and more people getting involved in it, more and more institutions, and people are actually using different ways to get exposure through futures and options and more sophisticated tools like that. We're now seeing the actual level of volatility in Bitcoin is not as great as it has been in the past. So that was really what we were trying to sort of get across to readers, that actually maybe it's not the digital gold, but maybe it's not as volatile as perhaps some people historically thought.
Yeah, I'm a fan of that logarithmic curve, right? So in terms of Bitcoin, as the difficulty increases and the supply halves and more people come in, it's like we're just crowding people into an elevator, right? You could fit four guys in an elevator and you got some breathing room. But when you go to put 12 in there, you're not as volatile. You can't move around.
That's true.
Right? I mean, yeah. That's a valid dumbed down scenario, but there's only 21 million Bitcoin.
And I think, you know, obviously you've got to bear in mind, Bitcoin is what, 12th anniversary this year, isn't it?
13.
So it hasn't been around that long.
And Cyber FM is older.
I know. We're a bunch of old crocs, aren't you, Cyber FM? That's the trouble. That's why we got on so well. But yeah, so these things take time for adoption. And initially, obviously, you get the enthusiasts and you know, perhaps they're slightly more gung-ho the way they want to buy and sell and trade. And what we're now seeing is a number of institutional buyers coming in to hold Bitcoin, and, you know, even it's being used as a payment mechanism. You know, it was only today or yesterday, one of the Swiss cities said, well, you know, it's something which can be used to pay taxes and the like. We've got countries like El Salvador saying it's legal tender. So as we see more and more examples of people or organizations giving it that sort of respect and, you know, commitment almost to it, I think we'll see Bitcoin as a price. I don't think we'll see as much volatility in the terms of the way it moves up and down necessarily. And so it's interesting, James, I was giving a presentation earlier this week and it's a very well firm of accountants, and they were saying, well, seems to me, Johnny, that there's a lot of education that needs doing. And I actually said, well, I'm not sure about that. And they said, well, why not? And I said, well, I think it's actually re-education, because a lot of people have heard of blockchain, they've heard of certainly Bitcoin, and they come to the conversation with a predetermined view. Oh, it's amazing, it's the solution to everything, or it's a load of old rubbish, or it's just for Ponzi scheme for sort of, you know, drug barons and the like, or Russian oligarchs. And the reality is that there's a lot of nonsense talked about Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies as a whole. And so we kind of have to say, look, can we just park all our initial thoughts to one side? And now let's look at the technology, let's look at the digital assets, and let's look at what they really can do. Because, you know, Bitcoin, for example, doesn't use as much electricity as everyone thinks it does. in terms of, you know, lots and lots of coal-fired power stations. It uses a lot of renewable energy. Bitcoin, as we've discussed many times before, or the technology of blockchain is now being seen by governments as a fantastic tool to crack down on the informal, the shadow economy, because it leaves a digital footprint. So, you know, the FBI only a couple of weeks ago got its biggest haul of, if you like, illegal assets. It picked up something like 3.6 billion worth of Bitcoin because they were able to follow, you know, I was told it could be as much as 56,000 different steps that they'd gone through to try and conceal and hide this Bitcoin stash. But the FBI were able to track it down. So if you're going to do something a little bit dodgy, you know, it's Friday night tonight, James, and if you're out on the razzle dazzle and you can do something a bit questionable, do you A, leave a footprint by leaving your credit card wherever you are, or leaving, you know, paying in Bitcoin, or do you just have a bit of cash and then no one really knows where you are because it's not directly attributable to you?
I'll tell you what I don't do, which is what that one woman did, was become a rapper on YouTube. That was how she got outed.
That's true.
Remember that?
Yeah,
they're like, you did this? You're a hacker?
But that
but
was
yeah,
like,
I know it.
Yeah, but remember last week, and we were talking to Dynarisk, and he was saying, right. You know, oh, some people say, oh, fantastic, I've just turned my 10,000 worth of Bitcoin into 100,000. I'm so pleased. And it's a bit like going to a soccer match or going to, I don't know, walking down the high street in, you know, New York or Main Street and saying, look, I've got a wallet full of cash. Aren't I clever? And waving it around, you know, people do, you know, because you're online, you know, you're probably more vulnerable. More people can look at it. And certainly people who you've got no idea looking at you than if you're out in the park or out in the street waving a wad of cash around. So it's amazing how people act online compared to how they perhaps act, you know, face-to-face or offline.
You know, all the technology in the world, and no matter how seamless and fast and great that you can make money, you will have that guy that will, like, announce online, I'm going on vacation. I'm going to be on Times Square in Manhattan, and my ledger will be in my pocket, everybody. Yeah. That's how you get a crime.
Yeah, nutty. But so one of the other stories that we covered, looked at this week, was how blockchain and digital assets are coming into the real estate sector. And, you know, one of the things that we're seeing, there's been a lot of talk about people wanting to offer fractional ownership, i.e. a slice of an office or a slice of an apartment, so that, you know, you can't necessarily afford the penthouse apartment in Trump Towers, but maybe you could afford, you know, 1% of it.
And I can afford the bathroom.
Probably the bathroom tap. It's so darn expensive. But
a towel in the bathroom.
Yeah, a towel, yeah. As used by the big man himself, possibly, if you're in Trump Towers, who knows? But
it's a very, very good towel. It's the best towel.
The very best towel. We've just seen in America, its first ever blockchain real estate transaction out of San Francisco with a company called Propi. And it was basically looking to sell off a part ownership of some real estate. This is tying in now to, after the break, we've got CMS coming and talking about what's happening in Luxembourg. Well, in Luxembourg, there's a company called Tokeny. They have a platform, and they've linked up with a company called Block Home, BLOCHOME, based in Luxembourg. And they're using blockchain technology and allowing, you know, very, very, you know, small investors, you know, as little as €1,000 to get exposure to a real estate development using blockchain technology. So we're beginning to see a lot of people talked about it. And now we're beginning to see that coming through and helping the real estate market, and, you know, using smart contracts, using different types of financing potentially, in order to digitize the land registry and who actually owns the property. So having seen a lot of chat over the last 4 or 5 years, we're now beginning to see concrete real examples. And if you remember, we went back to a couple of weeks ago, we had TPX, if you remember, we had Anthony Abel and David Parsons, and they were talking about what they were doing to digitize the land registry. So rather than digitizing the property, effectively digitizing the land registry, your name is put directly on the land registry. So I think we're going to see a lot more discussion around blockchain technology and real estate as we go through 2022.
Yeah, and those are actual use cases for NFTs as well. There was a house in Tampa that they sold as an NFT, but it was an LLC for the house. That was an interesting one that I read. I don't know if you heard about that.
No, it wasn't LLC, limited liability company.
Limited liability corporation.
Corporation, yeah.
Even though it was a house, but I think right. That's how they. You know, we should research that one. That could be a good future one.
Yeah,
I'll write an article.
Yeah. Oh, that'd be good. That'd be good.
More than a voice. I have a pen.
Walk down a tamper and have a look at it. Take a picture for us.
Yeah, swing by. It's all tax write-off.
Absolutely. You go on a road trip.
Yay.
And you could have one of your Luxemburgers then.
Go to Tampa and have a Luxemburger. You know what they say about Florida? You go on vacation, you leave on probation.
Oh, that's pretty cruel, isn't it? Okay. Well, look, okay. Well, James, we won't keep our guests waiting any longer. Obviously, if anyone wants to listen to any of the previous issues of Digital Bytes, just click on the cyber.fm and you'll see James and my ugly boat race, or as they call it, face. And be delighted for you to click on there. And if you'd like a copy each week of Digital Bytes, we send it out on a Wednesday morning London time here in the UK, and it's a series of different articles. And because most of our readers come from sort of regulated backgrounds, that they're exchanges, brokers, lawyers, accountants, asset managers. When we make statements, so we made a few statements today talking about what's happening in the market and minimum investments, things like that. Everything's hyperlinked. So there's like a little blue underline, and that takes you off to a website, a publication. And we use a number of publications from literally all over the world. So that way, you know that it's not a Trump tale. It's not fake news. We can verify that what we say, actually there's a credible source behind it. So please feel free to contact us, and we'll happily put you on the list and send you a copy of Digital Bytes once a week.
Sound crazy, it's because the world is crazy. We're not making it up.
God, what a crazy week we've had.
Yeah, it's been, I think next week's going to be very telling.
Yeah, I think there's a lot more to come. I think there's a lot more going on that we haven't, we're not party to, which is probably just as well, but certainly, effectively we're still in Europe, the UK is, and you think, what we got raging on our, on our doorstep is, a tantamount to what was going on in, World War II. Just, it's very frightening. And, some of those people in Ukraine, your heart goes out to them in terms of, absolutely horrific. But there you go.
See, I'm a little bit younger, right? I'm 46. I remember I was in elementary school when the Chernobyl accident happened.
Yep.
And I, as a 10-year-old, we were in 1985 or so, was it?
Yep.
They're like, you're going to die. Right here in New York, you're going to die.
Yeah.
And now I haven't thought about Chernobyl in 30 years. And here we are. Russia's went back and they took control of Chernobyl. It's like, oh, my God, I'm a kid again. Well, we were making jokes about, we used to hide. You'd get a drill and you would hide under your desk. And as a grown-up, you say to yourself, is a school desk really going to protect me from a bomb?
Yeah, well, not much is going to protect you. That's the reality. We know that as we're a bit older and wiser. But, we've been, as you say, I'm a little bit older than yourself, James. And this has been a consistent theme through my childhood and adult life of, someone's going to press that big red button and Armageddon is unleashed. And it's just a travesty that we find ourselves in the position that we are. And there's 44 million people, who have their country taken away from them. And probably, where it's going to be impacted is going to be in prices. When you look at somewhere like Turkey and you look at somewhere like Egypt, where up to 70% of their wheat comes from Ukraine and Russia. Well, if they're fighting each other, they certainly won't be tending the fields.
Yeah, nobody's so shipping wheat right now.
Where are they going to get their wheat and corn from? And you're going to have all sorts of anarchy if people can't put bread on the table, literally, because it's too expensive. But yeah, I'm digressing into an article we've done ready for next week, because it's something we've been looking at and thinking about and trying to take the emotion and politics out of it and saying, okay, well, how will it affect individuals going forward? And at the moment, I think you're right. We're going to see a lot more clarity, hopefully, over the next 7 days. And, you know, we'll be back online next week and, you know, we'll give you an update.
And it's how it actually affects everything on a global level, including inflation, right? Yeah. Because if you can't get X product or service out of whatever country, that demand is going to rise worldwide.
Yep. Yep. Very much so.
But that'll be gloom and doom. We got
on a happy, sunny note. But
why talk about gloom and doom when we have to bring on a lawyer? I mean, come on.
Look, don't give my guest a hard time. She's lovely. She's very, very bright. Got some great
lawyer.
I know.
She's a lawyer.
But she's not going to do you for speeding. So you're fine.
She's a lawyer.
No, she's fine. You'll like her. I know what you like. You'll probably fall in love with and want to run off and go and live in Luxembourg.
I'm going to get my visa ready. Going to Luxembourg.
All right. Well, we'll catch up after the break. And thanks for tuning into this week's Digital Bites, everyone.
You are listening to the brand spanking new cyber.fm.
Hey, guys. I'm back over here with Johnny. Johnny brought big guns today, huh? CMS Luxembourg. They wrote an article in the March 2nd issue.
Certainly did. Certainly did. So, James, yeah, welcome back after the break. And I'm really pleased. We've got Arilla Vimon from Luxembourg, which is obviously in Europe. And for those of you sort of not familiar with sort of geography of Luxembourg and the like, Luxembourg is a very small country, but it's very, very important when it comes to managing money. And it's got a very, very long-standing track record of being a very popular destination and location for funds and securities and regulations. And I'm delighted you've come, because I understand Luxembourg have been sort of pushing the envelope, and they've got some new exciting news in the digital asset world and legislation they've just passed. But before we get into your article, and I know you're going to touch on that, be great just to give the listeners a bit of background to, you know, yourself and the work that you do at CMS, who obviously are an international firm of lawyers.
Yeah, thank you very much. Thank you to you, James, and you, Johnny, for having me today. I'm very pleased to be here. So in order to present myself, so I'm Aurelia Wiemens. I'm a partner in the banking and financial services department, where I deal with regulatory matters. So for those of you who are not familiar with what this entails in practice, it's essentially advising regulated entities such as credit institutions, investment firms, portfolio managers, payment institutions, all those entities which are dealing with the financial sector. So assisting them in compliance with their numerous regulatory requirements for the carrying out of their day-to-day business.
Brilliant. And are you Luxembourg born and bred, or are you an import into Luxembourg? Because it's a very small country.
It is small. We have approximately 600,000 nationals, but you know, more who come from the border regions of France, Germany, and Belgium. And I am born and bred in France, and actually a bit also in the United States. That's just for the anecdote. But I came in 2010 to Luxembourg, and I was able to become a Luxembourg national because my grandfather was from Luxembourg. And if you have an ancestor who was a Luxembourg national, you can recover, so to speak, your Luxembourg nationality. So that's great. So I'm now both French and Luxembourg.
Oh, so does that make your granddad a Luxembourgian?
Yes, you know, nobody's really, you know, agreeing on how we should say it.
And of course, Luxembourg has very favorable tax treatment, doesn't it? I know, certainly for the funds, which is why historically it's been a good location.
Yeah,
and it's one of the bigger fund centers for assets and funds in Europe, isn't it?
Yes, correct. So it really is one of the most important fund center in Europe. And I would even say on an international level, we're very welcoming of financial entities, I would say in general, for the tax treatment. But you know, today that's a little bit less relevant, so to say, also because of its location, of you know, the stability of the government, the double triple A rating. So a number of reasons which really make Luxembourg an ideal location for financial entities.
Okay, so given it, you know, it's quite a prestigious location, Luxembourg is, to be fair. It's certainly not sitting on its laurels, though, is it? In the sense that you've written this article, and thank you for doing that this week, talking about the issuance and settlement of securities using blockchain technology. And it's not just chat, it's actually happened, hasn't it? Would you mind just giving us a bit of background to what's happened and why it's significant, please?
Yes, of course. And you're right in saying that, you know, one of the great force of Luxembourg is indeed its capacity to adapt to a changing world and framework. And this is really one of the main advantages of this jurisdiction. But to, you know, to speak more specifically of the subject matter of today, indeed, in relation to, you know, the issuance of securities on the blockchain, Luxembourg has last year taken a step forward in this respect. But maybe I need to go a little bit back in history and sure, just remind that the first step was in 2013. And be reassured, I'm not going to give you a law lesson.
That's not step by step every year.
Yeah. But in 2013, we had a first step, which was enabling the issuance of dematerialized securities. So where you essentially have an account which registers, you know, the type, numbers, and characteristics of a security which is issued. And then these securities may circulate by way of book entry in a securities account. So instead of having, you know, your piece of paper where you would need to exchange a piece of paper, and I'm a little bit, you know, going to forcing the trade here, but you essentially can do this by way of, you know, Excel sheets and accounts.
Yeah.
Then in 2019, we had a first step which relates more specifically to how can we integrate the blockchain within this system. And the legislator enabled the circulation of securities by way of secured electronic registration mechanism, such as the blockchain. So that was really one of the first major steps in relation to blockchain. And then in 2021, we had a further step, which we consider really as very important, is the fact for these securities to be able to be issued directly on the blockchain. So not only, you know, circulate via the blockchain, but really be created under a dematerialized form on the blockchain. So that's really, I would say, one of the major steps.
Well, so instead of just dematerialization, what you're saying is that you could actually create a security, a debt instrument or an equity, actually in an electronic format, or the information we could formed electronic. You didn't need to necessarily have a paper format. Is it? Am I correct there? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, absolutely. You're correct. So
what was driving that changes? Why bother? You know, they've got a very vibrant, very safe, secure financial system. Why do they want to mess around with sort of the newfangled technologies like this?
So because, you know, currently what we have to do is a little bit, is not as secure from a legal perspective, is we have a proof of concept where, you know, we're endeavoring to integrate, you know, the blockchain and what we currently have in terms of the issuance of securities, where we rely on the mirroring concept. And this is not really, I would say, satisfying for various reasons, and notably the fact that what you need to have a token which is representing the proof of ownership in an underlying existing security, which, you know, to be frank, from an administrative and even legal perspective is quite burdensome.
Yeah.
And, you know, going a step further is really just wanting to embrace the advantages of the blockchain and therefore, you know, be able to issue native tokens. So, you know, instead of having a mirror concept, it's your security is on the blockchain, which for various reasons, the regulator, the legislator, the government here in Luxembourg really feels that this is the way forward.
Got it. And would you say that these changes, because these are some, Luxembourg's one of the first jurisdictions, if not the first, to actually go as far as this and effectively create digital, not digital representations, but actually a digital mm-hmm. security. Mm-hmm. Has that just been driven by sort of, you know, forward-thinking regulators, or has there been genuine demand from, you know, possibly some of your clients, some of the banks and asset managers and, you know, and bits and pieces like that?
Yeah, I would say it's actually both. So it's recognizing a demand from the markets and also wanting to be at the forefront in this respect. And when we look at, you know, what we have been assisting our clients with, there has really been a demand for, you know, hey, we have this new technology. We really see the advantages of this new technology. How can we use it? How can we integrate it in our, you know, operational system, in our business case? We feel that there is also at the level, if you take, for example, you know, a fund, or if you take a securitization vehicle, there they have identified an interest in the market at the level of investors to use this technology. And this, of course, you know, having this demand from the market has deeply motivated the legislator and the government to take steps in order to meet the demands of this market.
Got it. And to give listeners, you know, those that haven't read this week's Digital Bytes yet, to give it some real substance, we've already had a French company, French bank, Société Générale. They've become the first organization to actually take advantage of this new legislation.
Yeah, so actually what they have done is they have issued native tokens, but under French law, because French law also enables this. But I'm not a French law specialist, so I won't go into the details of what they have exactly at their level. But so they have taken what French law enables them to do, but they have listed their native securities on the Luxembourg Stock Exchange, but on a specific listing, which is a securities official list. So the securities are listed, but they're not admitted to trading on a regulated market. So I would say the objective is to give visibility in relation to these type of securities. And it's a big step for the markets. And we really here see, I would say, the force of Europe in general, in the sense that you have a French native security, which is listed on a Luxembourg organization. So it's great to see this.
And do you see at the moment they're just listed, but do you see that as a sort of pre-runner or precursor to then being able to be traded on a Luxembourg stock exchange?
Well, we definitely hope so. Yeah, we definitely hope so. And our view is that, you know, it's indeed a first step, a little bit testing what happens, you know, testing also from an operational perspective and seeing what can be done then. And yeah, I mean, we hope that the next step would indeed be in light also of the EU framework, which is evolving. It's making, I would say, taking a step in order to adapt to this evolving landscape.
Brilliant. And so would it be fair to say it's months as opposed to years before we start seeing it, certainly in Europe, the ability to trade digital assets on a recognized stock exchange?
Yes, yeah, so there are EU initiatives which are currently well advanced in discussions at the European Parliament, European Council, and we're hoping to see these legislations adopted by, let's say, 2023, 2024. So it is, I mean, it's going to come tomorrow.
Yeah. Brilliant. Brilliant. Thank you very much. So I know at one level, this can be quite a, some people may be thinking, well, hang on. Okay. It's all very interesting, but what does it really mean? And, you know, I think this is a significant step by a very highly respected jurisdiction. And I think it's a taste of what's to come. I don't know whether what your thoughts are. Obviously you're very biased because you're a Luxembourgian or Luxembourgun or however I meant to pronounce it, but how would you put it in context, in summary, what this possibly means for some of your clients? Why would they be so pleased about this development?
That's a fair question. They're pleased because, you know, for most of them, it's really a way of reaching out to the public and democratizing, the word is mispronounced, but, you know, reaching out to a larger public instead of only institutions or institutionals or, you know, professional investors. Here, really, the objective is, okay, let's enable you and me to have access to investments in, you know, small, middle-sized enterprises or projects such as, you know, financing real estate, for example. And that is, I would say, what is behind some of the projects which we are dealing with. It's really this idea that you're creating a community, that you're reaching out to the public at large.
Right. So as you say, democratization of financial services rather than it being an exclusive club where, you know, it was only reserved for the wealthy few. But brilliant. Yeah. James, I know, sorry, I've hogged it a little bit this week, James. Any initial thoughts spring to mind? I know you've been doing some stuff with your DAO, so I know some of the developments in the US are coming on at a pace, but any thoughts the moderators talked about today with what Luxembourg went up to?
I like how you can use the word democratization, but you can't come out with the word Luxemburger. See, I'm thinking she's a Luxemburger.
I'm thinking a cheeseburger. I knew that. So I knew you were going to come up with that.
It's a Luxemburger.
Well, I was listening to the... It might be Luxembourg. I don't know.
Bourgeois.
Yeah, Luxembourg. Yeah, well, in French, you would say Luxembourgeois.
Look, I thought I made that up, and she just validated me. Am I a genius?
Oh, God, only because she lives in America and she's feeling sorry for you, I suspect, now, James.
I'm hungry now. So I was listening, though, and so in my limited mindset, right, it sounds to me, and correct me if I'm wrong, so let's say BMW wants to get into the distributed ledger world. Is it where Luxembourg is going to maybe allow a security to be wrapped into a token and then traded on a different exchange, or, you know, a DLT version of Luxembourg? Or is it more like a new company could come in without your typical IPO type deal? They go in as a token and sit alongside BMW. Am I close at all?
Yeah, but it's actually both, in the sense that you can have BMW, you know, whatever entity issuing securities, which would, and here I'm just going to specify, it's actually not wrapped in the token. It's directly in the token. And that's really the advantage of our legislative framework in Luxembourg. So it is, the security is the token is the security.
Okay.
And also, as you were saying, you know, your small company, which is not as well known as BMW, which, you know, does not have the same traction force, and doing the same thing.
All right, great. Because in America, over here anyway, and I'll speak for America, the wrapped idea has been creating so much controversy over here. So so now what you're saying is you've resolved that.
Yeah,
it's not a wrap. It is actually the token, the security.
It will be the security itself.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Okay, yeah. I got you.
So you don't have, you know, the debate. Oh, is the token a security? You know, should it be dealt with as if it is a security and apply all the rules, you know, which relate to it? It's the security, or the token is the security. Hence, you apply the same rules
Right. I think one of the issues over here is that when you wrap one, there's a supply question, right? The amount of diluted shares, because it could be
And is it a
uncontrollable.
derivative as opposed to security, James?
I'm sorry?
Is it then becomes a derivative as opposed to a security because
Right.
it's not actually, all that sort of stuff. Well, they've done Luxembourg much, much simpler, much, much more straightforward, I
Right,
think.
it sounds easier.
The just if I may, the downside to this is that for the time being, we also need the right type of service providers, and the market is getting ready, but not as quickly as it should.
So
So,
who are the, what are the missing service providers? What sort of services do you need?
yeah. So, in order to have the native token, we actually need the service provider, which is going to hold the security issuance account, and only certain type of entities can actually act as such. But these entities, either they are existing and they're not yet ready to have the operational mechanisms, the right infrastructure in order to in include the DLT within their systems, or the newcomers, well, they need to go through a whole process of being authorized in Luxembourg, and hence it gives us a little bit of a gap.
So these are these custodians, are they share registrars? What would, in traditional speak, what would you call them?
Settlement organizations or central account keepers. It depends on the type of security we would be dealing with, but
Right. Okay. Well, yeah. Well, there's certainly, I know, firms out there looking to try and crack that piece. And certainly, well, presumably, is it a role that some of the global custodians could possibly also provide? Yeah. So there's lots of those solutions certainly coming down the line. But great. Okay. Well, look, thank you very, very much for explaining it. Really interesting. And be great to get you back in a few months' time. And you can perhaps share with us some examples of, I know you're working on a couple of different projects. We've actually got one of your clients coming on in a couple of weeks' time, Tokeny, and I know you guys have been doing some work with them. So we'll talk and go into a bit more depth with them about some of the stuff they're looking at doing as well in other parts of Europe. But great to see Europe is plowing ahead, and it's just places like US and UK now got a, we're on catch up by the sound of things, James.
Hey, this is a good show. I'm kind of shocked that she's a lawyer. I'm not scared. I'm not intimidated. She sounds nice. That's not a lawyer.
He's a funds
Oh my
lawyer.
gosh.
She's not a traffic cop. I know what you're like in your BMW.
Don't sue me, but you're
Well,
very nice.
I
Oh,
don't
so
know with
funny.
who with you know whom you've been dealing with beforehand, but apparently not the best sorts of persons.
No, you don't want to know what he's been dealing with, Ronnie, I can
Damn
tell
it,
you.
America.
The land of the free.
Well, we try to
Right.
be friendly. We try to be friendly.
Brilliant.
I'm
Well,
a
thank
fan
you
of
very
Luxemburgers. Dan, you're
much.
making me hungry now. Well, look, finally, how's the best way if anyone would like to get in touch with you? What's the best way? On LinkedIn or?
LinkedIn, yes, LinkedIn or the website of CMS. You have our contact details, and
Brilliant.
easily
Okay.
reachable. Well, thank you very much for having me. It was
No, not at all.
very
Thank
nice.
you once again. And thank you, listeners, for tuning into the Digital Bike Show here on Cyber.fm. And James and I'll be back next week. We've got another guest lined up and some of the other articles and bits and pieces, and we'll be looking at a variety of topics. And as you know, the whole thing and the whole show is dedicated to look at how, where, and why blockchain technology and digital assets are being used in different jurisdictions and different industries. So thank you for listening to this. And James, as I say, that is a wrap, not a cheese wrap, but it's a wrap, and we're all finished for this week.
The show is not wrapped and listed on an exchange.